This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It is the third hour of our program. It's Anything Goes Friday. Just wanted to share a couple of stories with you real quickly. The USA Today op-ed that Donald Trump wrote that was literally a lie in every sentence, USA Today has finally gotten around to publishing a fact check on it after they were shamed by the Washington Post, Glenn Kessler's piece yesterday talking about that. This is pretty pathetic for Gannett. And in fact, we had a caller in the first hour of the program, as I recall, talking about how the their local newspaper, which is also owned by Gannett. Gannett is the largest newspaper publisher in the United States by circulation. And USA Today is the largest newspaper in the United States by circulation. That their local paper, which is published by Gannett, had Trump's, quote, editorial in it today. And no rebuttal, you know, a little mealy-mouth thing about this is just an opinion. But, you know, no, it's just a bunch of lies. And, you know, if you're a friggin' news organization, if you're going to call yourself a newspaper, for God's sake, publish the news. And I'm telling you, if the president of the United States sends a letter filled with lies to a newspaper, that is news. The story in USA Today should have been, what? Look at this incredible letter that we got from Donald Trump. It's filled with lies. How can this guy even continue as president? What is this going to do to his presidency? Who in the White House allowed this to happen? Was Sarah Huckabee Sanders in on this? Did Donald Trump actually write this? I mean, there's all kinds of stories there. But USA Today instead chose to be the you know, the sucker for Trump. The delivery vehicle for, you know, I don't know what. But this really, really, really hurts USA Today. It really hurts journalistic integrity in the United States. It hurts the credibility of the news media. And, of course, the lies about Medicare and about the Democrats hurt all of us. So, anyhow, there's that. The president has said that selling apartments to Saudis, Trump Tower apartments, condos, and selling weapons to Saudis is more important than human rights. It's more important than an American resident, employee of the Washington Post, being literally tortured, murdered, and dismembered with a bone saw in the Saudi consulate in Ankara, Turkey. You know, that's not that important. What's really important is that they give the Trump Organization tens of millions of dollars, maybe hundreds of millions. They continue to lavish money on the Trump Organization by staying in Trump hotels all over the country. And they're buying, according to Donald Trump, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of weapons from us, or hundreds of billions of dollars. The real number, the reality is that Donald Trump has not sold the Saudis a thing from all the news reporting I've been reading. That when he was over there and he held up that big thing that said $12 billion deal, you know, it was a letter of agreement. It was not a bill of sale. That deal is not yet done. But that was part of the Saudis sucking up to Donald Trump. It's true that during the Obama administration, there were a number of weapons sales made to Saudi Arabia that totaled something like $70 billion. But, you know, Donald Trump once again pulling a number out of his backside and using it to justify a regime that regularly tortures and kills people. And I mean, literally regularly, like every Friday, and in public beheadings. And we're not going to push back on that. You know, it used to be, no, we're not going to push back on that. That, yeah, they give a lot of money to the Wahhabist preachers, and the Wahhabism is the source of Al Qaeda and ISIS. But we're not really going to talk about that because we need their oil. Well, now we don't need their oil, although we're still buying their oil. Because we changed the law in the United States so the oil companies can actually export American oil. So you've got some oil companies exporting American oil, other oil companies you know, buying the tar sands from Canada and refining them here in the United States and actually exporting the product of that. But we're still importing Saudi oil. And this is, you know, I think it's time for us to re-examine our relationship with the kingdom if they don't start significantly changing their behavior. This is a really consequential issue. Albert in Marina Del Rey. Hey, Albert, thanks for waiting on hold there so long. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. I want to talk about messaging a little bit.
Sure.
So messaging before the, if I was running for Congress or some office, all I would be talking about is the corruption and then, you know, leading up to the election. And post-election, all Democrats should be talking about is Medicare and Medicare for all specifically. And some of the objections we need to go ahead and be ready to take on are things like price protection. And I got two words for people who don't understand what that is, Martin Shkreli. And if you want to go ahead and explain what that guy did, I'll go ahead and take the call offline. But Martin Shkreli, we're going to need price protections, and we can't be scared to, you know, say that. You need to know how the programs actually work.
Yeah, and Martin Shkreli was this young venture capitalist who bought a pharmaceutical company that made an obscure drug that was absolutely essential to a couple tens of thousands of people in the United States who have a rare genetic condition, as I recall. Correct me if I'm wrong, Albert. And then he jacked the price of that drug up 700% just to make money for himself, and then he bragged about it. He's in jail right now for fraud because he also runs a venture capital firm that was apparently, engaging in fraudulent behavior. I would add another name to that, and I believe her name is Heather Bresch, which is Joe Manchin's daughter, who is the CEO of the company that sells EpiPens, and she jacked the price on those things up. Another vitally important thing for people who have allergies. Making sense, Albert?
That is correct, Tom. And also, like I said, we can't be scared to. That's the only way you're going to be able to control costs. But also with Medicare, it would be criminal, and I would say it would be criminal if we don't worry about the supply of doctors. And people going into the healthcare profession understand that there should be price protection, and we should subsidize their education, because the only way you're going to truly long-term cover costs is to have more people giving care.
I agree. We should also, by law, stop the AMA from limiting the number of people who can graduate from medical schools in the United States. This lockdown monopoly the AMA has had, you know, operating as a union, basically, only it's kind of the worst aspect of unionism, you know, limiting the supply of labor to drive up the price of that labor, is not doing any kind of favor to the American people. Albert, thank you. Spot on. Laura in Chicago. Hey, Laura, what's up?
Yeah, hi. So I'm Dr. Laura Chamberlain. I'm with Clean Count Cook County. I'm an actual election integrity activist. I'm not, what's your name?
You're not a troll?
Okay. Yeah, I'm not a troll. So I wanted to talk to you about what people can do if they find that they have been purged from the voting rolls. Right. There are things that they can do. So if you discover in advance of November 6th that you have been purged, we're asking everybody to check your voting registration online. If you discover in advance, then it's really beneficial to take copies of your voter registration cards, mailers from the election division, copies of any emails, down to the election division with at least two pieces of ID. Okay.
Right.
Most states require two pieces of ID.
Right. You need to prove your residency and your citizenship.
That's exactly right. And you go down to the election division. If other people in your neighborhood have been purged as well, then go down in a group. It does help to go show up with several people, right? And you, and if you can, record what the officials say back to you in some manner, but you have to be discreet. Okay.
Right.
And so you go down there and you ask to be reinstated. And don't, they may put some hurdles over you or whatever. Ask every time they put up a hurdle, say, okay, if I do this, then when will I be reinstated? Push them for an actual date that you will be back on the rolls so that you can check, okay? I have heard of many people that have gotten back on the rolls if they push. You know, it's the squeaky wheel that keeps
the
oil.
Otherwise, right? It's after the election that they'll take care of it. Is that the problem?
Well, here's the deal. That's exactly right. So if they, you also, at the same time, I think that everybody, if you're supporting a candidate or candidates in your area, you should notify them that you've been purged and that you're in the process, what the election officials have told you, so that they can start gathering names. There have been challenges to elections based on voter purges, so that's very important for candidates to know. You do have the right to go on election day or in early voting, on the states that have early voting, and vote on a provisional ballot. that you cannot stop at just voting on the ballot, okay? Mm-hmm. Here are things that we recommend. First of all, you have to complete that ballot on the outside envelope exactly how you think you're registered to vote. So carry your voter registration card with you, because some people may say Sam Cooney Jr. and forget they registered Jr., right?
Right, or in Georgia, if I said Thomas C. period Hartman in one thing, and I simply said Thomas C. Hartman without the period after my middle name or my middle initial in another place, right now, Brian Kemp would refuse to register me to vote.
That's exactly right. That's it. So on your voter registration card, it will say how you registered to vote. So please sign the envelope like that, okay?
Right.
And complete it completely. A lot of provisionals, we've actually did a study in Chicago after an election on provisional ballots, and only 30% of them were counted. But some people didn't fill out the envelope. They just didn't. They didn't even bother.
Which guarantees that your provisional ballot gets thrown away.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So you fill that out. You take a picture, if you can, in the privacy of your voting booth, of your voted ballot and your completed envelope. Turn off the flash, okay? Because in some states, it is illegal to take a picture of your ballot. Okay, so turn off the ballot. And it's definitely illegal to take pictures of other people voting in a polling place.
Right.
So they may have a real connection. So, and then you go down with your pieces of ID, take all the pieces of ID you can, down to the election officials during the week after the election day.
And clean it all up.
You argue. And if you can go in a group.
Yeah, you said that. Laura, we just have 5 seconds left. Isn't it a shame that we have to jump through all these damn hoops? I mean, the Selective Service registers 18-year-olds, young men, as soon as they turn 18. Why can't we do that with voters?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. I mean, Selective Service, the government knows who's a citizen and who isn't. You know, residents in the United States are not getting Selective Service notices when they turn 18. Just citizens. We know who we are. This is crazy. This is all designed to keep the Republicans in power. Laura, thank you very much. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's 18 and a half past the hour. We'll be back with more of your calls on Anything Goes Friday right after this. And welcome back. Shay in Fallbrook, California. Hey, Shay, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching Free Speech.
Oh, hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for all your work.
Sure. You're sounding kind of faint, Shay. I don't know if there's anything you can do about that.
Yeah, one second. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you.
Okay, I wanted to talk to you about the newer scientific knowledge about trauma,
mm-hmm.
and especially developmental trauma, and what they know about how it's based in the body's biology around the fight, flight, and freeze response. And there's some really good books on this, and it's really not in the mainstream for a lot of reasons, especially for the fact that most of the big research that is done by pharmaceuticals who want to create a pill.
Yeah.
And most of the new therapies are not around pharmaceuticals. They're around what they call somatic mindfulness, which is being paying attention to the sensations in your body, because it's a recognition that especially when you're young, when you feel bad, you go into these different responses, just like all animals do, fight, flight, or freeze. And especially when you're young, and, you know, a human family, you know, and you can't run away from your family effectively. So you eventually go into what they call the immobility response. And that does a terrible thing to your entire system. And it basically compromises your ability to self-regulate.
Hmm.
And it's incredible knowledge, and I think, and it's well known, Oprah's actually a huge advocate for this now,
mm-hmm.
and it's something everybody should understand, because the American Academy of Pediatrics calls it the biggest undiagnosed public health problem in this country, if not the world.
Yeah.
Really.
I would say it's around the world, because, you know, most of the conversation around trauma in the United States is around child abuse and spousal abuse and things like that. But the reality is that not only is the reality is that in large chunks of the world, the principal source of trauma is war. And that is a source of trauma that, I mean, trauma like that associated with war, where you see people killed and you fear for your life, particularly through your childhood, literally fear for your life every single day. Every time a plane goes over, you know it could be near your death. That kind of trauma is actually epigenetic. It actually alters your DNA.
Indeed. And there's a couple books that'll really explain, because those are what we call shock trauma. Shock trauma are those huge, really obvious events. When it comes to developmental trauma, which is lesser known about, is how attachment, and I don't know if you're familiar with attachment theory, but how
very familiar with it.
How there's neglect in early childhood effectively dysregulates the child's nervous system.
Yeah.
And that's a pattern that's pervasive that can last for the rest of your life. I'm 40 years old.
Although there's some fascinating, forgive me for interrupting, but we got 20 seconds,
Sure.
We hit the break here, Shay. There's some fascinating new therapies that involve re-going through those roughly 30 developmental stages where you literally are learning to crawl all over again. You're relearning all the things that babies learn, reintegrating this stuff for attachment disorders, and they really work.
The two books I want to recommend on the new science of trauma is The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk and Waking the Tiger, Healing Trauma by Peter Levine. These are most insightful understandings that I've ever read, and I've studied a lot of different therapies.
Okay. Shay, I got to wrap it up, but thank you. That's useful information. I appreciate it, and thanks for sharing it not just with me, but with our entire audience. 22 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And it's Anything Goes Friday, picking up your calls. Paul in Glenside, Pennsylvania. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Following up on earlier comments you had about Medicare for All, I'd like to draw everyone's attention to an article in The Hill that came out on October the 8th, a few days ago. And it's Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, his response to Medicare for All, basically the Republican pushback. Mm-hmm. And he basically says, and he's quoted by the writer Nathaniel Wetzel from The Hill, Medicare for All with the Democratic Party is, quote, the Democratic Party is going off the rails, unquote. And I don't want to get into repeating all the lies he packs in there. But what I really want to point out is, in the guts of the article, what's most disturbing, and again, following up on things that you've been saying about Medicare for All and the lies in the USA Today op-ed.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the quote from the writer, Nathaniel Wetzel. Medicare for All has become increasingly popular among Democrats and is now favored by many of the party's potential 2020 presidential candidates. However, many congressional Democrats have yet to completely embrace the idea, and while Senator Bernie Sanders has sponsored a Medicare for All bill, there's no real push for it in Congress, unquote. Tom, if you know anything about Congress, H.R. 676, anyone can just put that in.
It's got like 131 sponsors or something like that, co-sponsors.
123 out of 199 elected Democrat men and women in Congress are co-sponsors, not publicly on record, in black and white on the bill.
Yep.
H.R. 676. And not only that, this bill's been introduced maybe every year for the last 5 or 6 years.
Oh, no, John Conyers started introducing H.R. 676 at least a decade ago and maybe longer. I mean, it was probably 12, 13 years ago. He was on this show on a regular basis promoting that legislation.
So what you have, Tom, is not just the complicity of USA Today with this agitprop, this pushback. What I see is a pattern. As soon as President Obama came out and asserted his leadership of the Democratic Party and said he sees Medicare for All, he sees college education tuition-free, community college education tuition-free, issues like that, it is no longer a bizarre socialist thing going on. It is the leader of the Democratic Party saying these are our issues.
Amen. And we also need to point out to people, we are literally the only developed country in the world that doesn't cover for health care, doesn't cover all of its citizens. at low cost or essentially for free. And it's time for us to do it. Paul, thank you. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
We'll be back after this break at the bottom of the hour with more of your calls on Anything Goes Friday. Get your oars out. That's a good one, Sean. 34 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Kazumi in Seattle. Hey, Kazumi, what's on your mind today?
Hi. Love your show, Tom. I have stage 3 breast cancer.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And I decided not to go the conventional route. No radiation, no chemo, no surgery. So 2 weeks ago, I came across Rick Simpson, the name Rick Simpson. Mm-hmm. And I heard that this cannabis oil has cured a lot of people. So I'm just wondering, now just going to the stores here in Washington, I found an oil, and they said it was the Rick Simpson oil. But I'm wondering, do you know anything about it? And I'm worried about if these people have... How do I say, made it correctly,
right,
without pesticides and things like that. I'm worried about that because there is a stamp, I think, that the state gives with certain products in the shop,
right,
that say that they're pesticide-free, blah, 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 et cetera. But this,
yeah,
product doesn't have it. But I don't know if that means anything, because the lady at the shop said that it costs $10,000 a month for these companies to get this label. So,
Kazumi, I don't know. We need to get Angela back on here, our pot expert. I can tell you, I do know what Rick Simpson oil is. I believe he might have trademarked it or something, because a lot of places are now using RSO rather than spelling out Rick Simpson oil. I have bought RSO in local dispensaries. You know, it's just super concentrated cannabis. And we also know that there are a number of studies now, and there's a couple of good ones over at Dr. Greger's site at nutritionfacts.org, where he cites all these studies showing that cannabis has a protective effect against cancer. That said, if I had cancer, I would not be using marijuana as my principal form of treatment. The stuff around Rick Simpson oil actually curing cancer is really controversial. I realize, you know, Tommy Chong used it to cure his prostate cancer, claims he did. And there are a few others, you know, kind of high profile.
And there's lots of people on YouTube, too.
Yeah, no, I know. But, what I remember and what haunts me, Kazuma, I had this was back in the 1980s when Louise and I were running the Salem Children's Village. And there was a guy who worked at Erewhon, which is this food company out of Boston that was based on macrobiotics, Roshi Suzuki's, I think is his name, thing, you know, where you eat brown rice and lots of veggies and you always balance things out. And he was diagnosed with colon cancer. And they found the tumor. They could have removed the tumor. He would have been fine. It had not metastasized, so it was not as radical a position as you're facing. But he chose to use microbiotics instead of the surgery, and he was a very good friend of mine, and he was dead 6 months later. Until this has been used in clinical settings, until there have been good double-blind studies, and those are not going to come down the road really quickly because there's still a federal law against even doing research on marijuana. It's going to be a while, but boy, I would be very, very careful. You're talking about your life, Kazumi.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think, you know, these cure-all things, you know, I remember, again, from the 70s, everybody was all about Laetril, and they were, you know, everybody was eating, you know, mm-hmm, 10, 20, 30 almonds every 5 hours or something like that, and going down to Mexico and getting Laetril and stuff. And now we know, after, you know, a decade or decades of looking at that, you know, it doesn't make any difference. There may be some, again, protective effect, you know, of having those cyanide compounds in your bloodstream, of eating almonds regularly against cancer. But once the cancer has established itself, it's a completely different disease or a completely different thing than the little random cancer cells that the body's immune system routinely cleans up and can be assisted in that process with pot or with Laetril or whatever, I would be very careful. I can't say that strongly enough. I want you to live. So please get some good medical help. Kazumi, I need to move along, but thank you very much for the call. I'm sorry I can't give you, good news. Thank you. You're welcome. Horace in High Point, North Carolina. Hey, Horace, what's on your mind? That's a heartbreaking call.
I wanted to ask a question concerning Kavanaugh.
Sure.
I was told that if you lied to the FBI, that's a federal crime, and if you lie to Congress, that's a federal crime. So since he lied, why can't you impeach him?
You can.
What is the process? Why?
The process is that a majority of the members of the House of Representatives have to vote to impeach. There has to be, first of all, you have to have somebody draft the articles of impeachment, you know, which is basically an indictment. You know, it's here's the crime he committed, here's when he committed it, here's how he committed it, here's the proof that he committed it, here's what makes it irrefutable, here are the witnesses. This is our bill of impeachment. You put that forward in the House, some member of the House of Representatives puts that forward. The Speaker of the House then has to, you know, it presumably goes through a committee, I'm not sure which committee, but it goes through a committee. Maybe judiciary, and then it comes to the floor of the House. The Speaker of the House, in this case it would be Paul Ryan, would have to say, yes, I will allow a vote on this, and there's no way in hell Paul Ryan's ever going to do that, but he may not be Speaker in a few months. The Speaker of the House then says, okay, here's the vote. You hold the vote. If the majority, a simple majority of members of the House of Representatives vote yes, then Judge Kavanaugh at that point would be considered impeached, but he would not be removed from office. He would still be a judge on the Supreme Court, just like Bill Clinton and Andrew Johnson were both impeached, but neither one of them were removed from office. Then it moves to the Senate. The impeachment is merely a statement by the House of Representatives that we think this guy is guilty, and here is our proof, right? This is, in other words, it's like a prosecutor's opening statement in a trial. That's what the impeachment of the House is. And then it moves to the Senate, where the Senate actually conducts an actual trial. It's presided over by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. It would be John Roberts in this case. And in that trial, the person being impeached has an opportunity to present his evidence saying, you know, no, I'm not guilty. The senators who agree with the impeachment, with removing him from office, get to make their argument. And then, again, a vote is held. And in the Senate, the vote has to be two-thirds. So it takes 66 senators in the Senate. And if that happened, and in the case of Bill Clinton, they only got 65. Maybe they got fewer than that. In the case of Andrew Johnson, they were one vote short. And so if you get the 66-plus votes, then Kavanaugh would be removed from office. So it's a pretty high lift, Horace, because of that 66-vote requirement in the Senate that is built into the Constitution. This is not something that, you know, the Senate Majority Leader can change by changing the Senate rules. So,
okay, I understand what you're saying, but being that he had all those thousands of documents which haven't been produced yet,
right,
and he hasn't
hundreds
been
of
questioned
thousands
by the FBI, the Democrats, if they take charge, can go through all of these things and get them out of there.
Possibly.
Order to do justice properly, these things have to be done, in my opinion.
I agree. I absolutely agree. I think that, you know, it's been a long, long time since anybody has been held to account for lying to the Senate. You know, mm-hmm. my Senator Ron Wyden, the tobacco executives back 20 years ago lied to his face. No, Senator, tobacco is not addictive, under oath, right? Those guys should have gone to jail, but they were multimillionaires, so they didn't. I agree with you, Horace. I think that it's time for justice on this, but I'm just not holding my breath, you know, understanding the political realities of it all. Brenda in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Brenda, what's up?
I wanted to talk about the Kavanaugh and Director Ray.
Mm-hmm.
Defended his limited probe. In it, he goes on to say that it was a standard limited probe. Then he would not be direct on how much the White House influenced what he asked.
All right. This is FBI Director Christopher Wray.
At the end of this, he just goes off on, well, the FBI is engaged in thousands of terrorist investigations. Right now, I sit here, currently we're investigating 5,000 terrorist cases across America and around the world. And I'm thinking to myself, women, if one in every woman is raped, and supposedly the last statistics I read, one in 71 men, that is a form of terrorism. And children that are raped and repeatedly raped, who have been raped by priests or distant relatives or their spouse or whatever, that is living in fear every day of your life.
Yeah.
So, and it's like he just dismissed it because we're busy investigating terrorism.
Yeah, it is.
They don't care.
I agree, Brenda. This, you know, the patriarchy is alive and well, and also the Republican Party is alive and well, and they're going to protect their own no matter what. Look at Roy Moore. It's just, you know, a poster child for this. And which brings us back to Horace's conversation, what do we do about it? And, you know, one thing that can be done is to impeach the guy. But I also agree with your point that we need to redefine terrorism. The you know, 9/11 did not kill as many Americans as the tobacco industry kills every month. 9/11 did not create as much terror as abusive, husbands and fathers in this country, and certainly mothers as well, across and other, happens every day. We've got some serious, and thank you, Brenda, for pointing that out. We got some serious issues here that we really need to redefine and recalibrate. Sonny in San Rafael, California. Sonny, I'm going to, forgive me, but I'm going to take a break here and put you on hold, and I'll pick you up on the other side of this, because it's wandering into 46 minutes past the hour, and you would just get cut off by the break anyway if I didn't do that. We'll be right back. It's Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program, helping you win the water cooler wars. A lot going on. We got an interesting weekend coming up. There's an election, if you haven't noticed. Make sure that the Republicans have not purged you from their voting rolls. Check your registration online. Go to rockthevote.org.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit tomhartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with more of your calls in just a second. And welcome back. Sonny, watching Free Speech TV in San Rafael. Hey, Sonny, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom.
Hey.
I wanted to talk about, because I can't say the journalist's name. Is it Khashoggi?
Because it's a hard G. That's how Bob Ney pronounced it. He used to live in Saudi Arabia, so I'm going to go with his pronunciation, Khashoggi.
Khashoggi, okay. So Trump's analysis, whatever, him saying, weighing, you know, how important is Khashoggi next to these arms sales?
Mm-hmm. You mean on the election?
Right. So another lie within the millions of lies that this idiot tells is that, which I didn't know, and maybe you can fact check me if I'm wrong, is that these arms that he's talking about are defense systems that are basically only compatible with what the U.S. makes here. And his lie about, well, if they don't sell them to the Saudis will just go get them from the Russians or China. Apparently, it would take them a decade before they'd be able to buy anything that was compatible with those systems.
Or they'd have to spend a mind-boggling amount of money to basically replace, you know, a large chunk of their military infrastructure. Yeah,
right.
But I think that the large investment part is the more likely thing. I don't think they would take a decade to do that.
Well, it just seemed to me that was a little fact that he had dropped out of.
You're right.
I mean, facts don't matter, but that to me seemed like.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Insult upon insult. So that's all, Tom.
Okay.
Love your show.
Thank you, Sonny. It was a great point. Thank you very much for calling and making it. James in Franklin, Tennessee. Hey, James, what's on your mind today? James? James, you need to listen to your phone. James is on line 7, sure, if you want to check him out. Norma in Montgomery. Hey, Norma, what's on your mind today?
Well, first, a little tidbit. Our high schools here in Montgomery, we have 5. We have had trouble with the school system, and they have been on intervention and been reevaluated, changes in who's in charge and who is not. They are so bad now that they are about to lose accreditation.
This
is affecting the Air Force Base because they do not want to bring their children here to Montgomery. But that's how bad the schools are.
Mm.
Also, Martha Roby said she was going to fix our VA hospital. They spent close to $900,000. That was the original bid. I'm putting an intruder fence around the VA hospital. Before Martha Roby, our Republican representative for this district, interfered, it was a 3-star VA hospital. It is now a 1-star VA hospital.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
So the Republicans are screwing things up worse than if they didn't do anything. Is that what you're saying, Norma?
Yes. Also, our Democratic candidate for governor is pro-life. And I think that people need to take a better look at who their person, who the people are on the ballot. Where do they come from? Particularly this age group is hitting me in the face of between 40 and 50. Mm. And where they came from, and are they actually being, are they Trojan horses? Are they being backed by these groups like the Heritage Foundation, the Koch brothers, or the Federalist Society? And I think that if you don't look into who is on your ballot and where they came from and where they're getting their money and what their personal beliefs are, you're in trouble, because I think that this is part of the takeover of the United States.
Yeah, by the corporatists and the religious freaks. Yep, Norma, thank you. Thank you for all 3 points there. Good stuff. It's always good stuff from Norma. It's 10 minutes past the hour. We'll be, or before the hour, excuse me. We'll be right back. Tom Harbin here with you, and Daniel in Dadeville, Alabama. Hey, Daniel, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. First of all, I'd like to appreciate your show. And second of all, I care about all the people from Mexico Beach all the way through the Virginias.
Yeah.
My question is, and maybe you can enlighten me, I'm worried about how the cleanup and what they're going to do with the debris that is left over. Where is that going to go? Is it going to wind up in the Gulf of Mexico or landfills?
I would guess it'll wind up in landfills, Daniel, but that's a really good question. I have never thought to ask. It's got to be an issue, and it's got to be an issue that's been dealt with in the past. I mean, this is a part of the world where we regularly see hurricanes that are massively destructive, although they're getting, you know, worse and worse. I remember a news story after Hurricane Sandy out in New Jersey that some landfills were being inappropriately, they were dumping storm debris in these landfills in a way that was not consistent with the law or proper environmental practices. But I can't remember any more details than that. So, Daniel, I just don't know. That's a good question. Maybe somebody listening will know. We'll get the word out there. Thank you, Daniel, for the call. Maya in Highland Park, Illinois. Hey, Maya, what's up? You want to talk about Rick Simpson oil?
Yes, I have leukemia, and 2 years ago, I went on the Rick Simpson oil and found that it was, you have to work yourself up to a whole gram a day.
Right.
And that's, and in Illinois, it's legal. And so I wanted to make sure that it was, you know, as she said, it was, you know, nothing wrong with it, nothing tainted. So to get it legally, it's $80 a gram. $80 a gram per day is a lot of money.
Yeah.
And after a year, my numbers were still the same. So finally, I said, well, I'm going to go broke here. So I went to a different doctor, and I went on chemo. And the first month, because my cells were covered with THC, my numbers went back down to normal. I went right into remission. It's amazing. So you can't say that it didn't do anything for me, but it didn't help me enough. I had to still go on the chemo, which I have to take every day for the rest of my life. I'm a serious case, but I survived it. And it's
so you think, and I've seen this with my own eyes and in my own family. When Louise went through chemotherapy for breast cancer, she was also smoking pot for the nausea, and I think it was helping her in ways beyond just the nausea, but it was fabulously successful for that. You're suggesting that the Rick Simpson oil, along with chemotherapy, was more effective than, in your opinion or your experience, chemotherapy alone was.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you for that, Maya. If you're using conventional treatments and then augmenting them with natural things, and I realize there are some cancer doctors who don't like that, but that's, and there are others who are enthusiastic about it. Louise had one of each. She had one regular oncologist who was like, don't take anything else. And then another oncologist who Ellen Ratner hooked us up with, who is up in New York. He's a regular MD and, specializes in cancer. But he said, oh, here, take this. And he's, you want to take turmeric and you want to take magnesium and you want to smoke some pot and, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, thank God she got through it okay. You know, it's been more than 5 years now. And I'm so glad to hear that you're in remission, Maya. Thank you.
Well, plus I might say that I'm a registered nurse, so I worked for about 50 years as a registered nurse. So I know what I'm talking about, too.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Maya. Thanks for adding that. I appreciate it. Steve in New Boston, Michigan. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Sam.
Hang on just a second, Steve. I'm sorry. I hit a button by accident. Okay, you're back on the air. Yeah, you're back on the air.
Yeah, I'm calling in about the people who were talking about RSO. Mm-hmm. I myself use RSO for chronic pain. I've got a broken back and severe nerve damage.
Oh, well, that's, science proves that. You know,
got me off of the opioids, and I'm doing better now. But I wanted to share something. Anybody who needs information on all things cannabis can go to a site, www.green-flower.com, and you can find out everything you need to know from this company. I have learned so much from these people.
So this is not your company, Steve?
No.
It's just a resource?
Yeah, and they're out of California, and they're very knowledgeable. I don't think there's anybody has as much knowledge about cannabis as these people have. And you can go onto their site, and there's all kinds of different topics you can click on, and you can learn the things that you need to learn.
Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Very, very helpful.
Yeah, good talking to you.
And remember, in November, vote Democrat.
Yeah. Yeah, well, remember in November, vote. I mean, you know, double-check your voter registration. Thank you, Steve, for the call. My apologies to the people still holding online. I will be back on Monday, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise, and we will continue these conversations. There's so much going on in the world right now. It's really important that we know what's going on. Please, one of the things that we have learned in the last couple of weeks is that people tend to believe their friends and family about the news. About 70% of people consider friends and family a more authoritative source of news. Only 40% consider the news to be an authoritative source of news. So if you're well informed, and if you're listening to this show, I believe you are, please start telling people what you know and tell them about the news sources. Get out there, get active, tag. You're it. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you on Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.